Blog Talk Radio.
They say we living in the last days, so I'ma steady put you first to my last day. Even if I stand alone, I know it's better than conforming to a world mores are irrelevant. It's so evident we lie to feel accepted. The face behind the mask is afraid to be rejected. So we neglect the intellect that our spirit speaks. We search the world to be content but never finding peace. That piece of our peace is only found in you. We'll puzzle cause the puzzle piece is missing truth. Look around, it's like we searching for that blues clue. We got the knowledge but we do the things that fools do. That's why I gotta be the difference. It's time to redefine the meaning of a Christian. These hypocrites don't make the people wanna listen, so instead they support these rappers killing off our children. So many rappers, so much talent, competing for a title, man, I just let them have it. They trying to be the best, but I know the greatest. They trying to make it big, I know the one who made it. I hit a model rapper who's a Christian. Some put the rapper first just to get the world to listen, and I get it. But sometimes they take it out of context, forget about God, they tryna be the one who got next. And we've been purchased by the king, but too many of our souls are repossessed because of greed. Now wait a minute, understand what I mean. See, we always wanna take, but we ain't never taking heed. The American dream, we work hard so we can live it out. But God can bless America if we kick him out. And what's the point of standing up if we ain't standing out? It's time to start living this life that we preach about. I wake up every morning to a sick church. Christian rappers only real focus is a sick verse. It gets worse, we're robbing them like a snatched purse. Oh yeah, we're quick to sell them God, but never teach them how to put them first. So I'ma go and say it first. Christianity is more than just a message on your t-shirt. And it's more than a religion that the world hates. It's that hope you never had in the first place. See, he's that cool in your hot day. He's that smile on your hot day. He's like dinner on a Sunday. You know when grandma cooking and she pack you that to-go plate. It's the little things that we take for granted. Like they ask what's going on, now you aggravated. You don't trust nobody, you say love is overrated. But God is love, you just being complicated. See, love is always bigger than its context. That's probably why we take it out of context. See, we done turned love into a contest. These women coming for your man like I got next. We got to book a life, but no class. And some of y'all will do anything for a Boaz. And after this, most of y'all gonna be real mad. Man, I'm mad too, why you think I just now? We try to use the world to define us. Man, we so lost that the lost trying to find us. And God said he looking like rise up. And if you selling out, boy, get your price up. God wants the ones who carry their cross. Look, it's time to rise up. Man, church, take off. I ain't trying to throw stones to seek you off. I'm just saying the shoe fits, then kick it off.
I just love that part when she says kick it off. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. This is Big Girl Talk Radio. You know, you are here with me. This is Serena, a.k.a. Anna, Mama Anna, Dr. Anna, and Monica. We are so excited to be here with you on today. I really would like for you to, I want to urge you to invite some other people on today, your friends, or family members, those who you feel need to hear, not just some words of encouragement and support, but words of wisdom. We really want to invite some people to be a part of our conversation tonight. And if this is your first time here with us, I'm here with my daughter and partner, Monica Queen. Queen Natural, Queen of Nature. We are both so excited and thrilled to be here on today. Again, I am Serena Anna Hollis. I'm a mentor, counselor, a woman, a mother, a partner, a business owner, and a kingdom wealth builder and visionary. I am also with my daughter, who is Queen Monica. She is a naturalist and healer. Also, she's a business owner. Besides being a naturalist and a healer, she's also a mother, a daughter, and a sister, and a woman in this movement on a health mission. And she's also the best CMOS gel professional in this side of town and all the state of Florida and Georgia that I know about. And that's my daughter, Queen Monica. If you know anything about naturalism, and health, you know, that is such a need right now, and it is it's not just a need, it is a requirement to think about your health, your body, and your immune system, but more than anything, how you rest and how you receive the energy that you need to get through every day and things that we have to do in our everyday activities. Okay, so Monica, thank you for being live in presence. I know that you're moving around there in Georgia. Everyone else knows that I'm away on a spiritual rejuvenation, restoration, if you will, and some networking at the same time. So how are things? Yes, how are you doing? How are things going for you?
It's going. You know,
okay.
I can't complain.
Okay. All right. Well, yes, this, you know, I wanted to, and I know that, you know, because everyone doesn't know how we create our topics, but I just wanted to share with our audience that our topics and conversations really flow naturally. This is not scripted and unscripted. We just basically have a conversation based on where we are and in our meditation together, and it may be on different courses. However, today we're talking about 8 signs that a person or people may have bad intentions in your life. And everyone knows that we all have, here at Big Girl Talk Radio, we have a lot of opinions about life and topics and things that I have experienced with in my 54 years, and Monica has some real life experience and passion about, but we also collectively have a passion and a heart about the community at large. And I use the word community because I mean everyone. This is not something that is a divisive end or a racial end or cultural thing that, or anything that creates any type of cultural end or racial divide, I'm totally against. I love inclusivity because God is our Father. He created us all. So with that being said, we, with the community at large, is something that we want to focus on. We want to focus about the things that cause us to feel enslaved and things that cause us to be in a position to feel like we're settling into a place of bondage. We want to bring exposure to that. We want to bring some knowledge, wisdom, and experience to that. When we talk about bondage, soul ties, you know, we can speak from the perspective of not just being a woman, but sisters and mothers for the men that have just joined us. Thank you, Derek. Thank you, Roger. Thank you so much. Thank you, Devon, for joining us. I see a few other people on. I see their numbers. We want to speak from, and for our brothers too, we want to speak from places of brothership and fathership, but mostly because I'm a woman, my daughter's a woman, so we're coming from the perspective of sisters and mothers for everyone in our community to everyone in our communities. And again, that's very, very inclusive. So tonight, we want to talk about some signs of people who may have had intentions, both male and female, the signs of red flags in relationships, courtships, and fellowship. Normally, we would ask, would or is this person's intentions for me now? When we ask that question, it's usually relative to someone or a love interest. You know, and that's not always the case. That is not always where we are. It could be relationships. It could be fellowship relationships. It could be business relationships. It could be work relationships, home relationships, relatives. You know, we have to know where we are and where we believe that we are, not just as women, but as people. But mainly, I have to point this out, mainly for women, because we are the most vulnerable
in these situations due to the nature of being a woman and being conditioned to love. That's part of our nature. We have not just a condition of love. We have a we've been gifted with thinking and leading from our hearts. We've been gifted in thinking and leading from a place that that says to nurture and to give, do, support. Put yourself down. There are so many people who really do believe that they should deny themselves almost to a fault, almost, and don't even realize that they're denying themselves. Okay, so let's get this out of our way and just realize too, and this is just something that we have to embrace. Not everyone who says they love you loves you. You know, we throw that word around a lot, a whole lot. I hear myself say it a lot. And when I hear myself say it, I'm almost convicted because God is saying to me, do you know what you mean when you say it? Because we can love people with the love of God. But me, my personal self, if I can't claim that I love someone because I'm not capable without God. I'm not capable. I'm capable of possibly caring and being alike, but we cannot believe that everyone who says they loves us, it loves us, especially when it comes to women. We cannot just believe that when a man says, I love you, that he loves you. That's not reality. Once you, and this is another thing, this is another rule. I don't care what relationship you have. Once you let someone in, true colors are going to come out, whether they're good or bad. Whether they're good or bad, they're going to come out. True colors are going to come out either way. You will see that person's true colors. The point is are we capable of being vulnerable in a healthy way? Are we capable of being vulnerable in a healthy way? So some of those things that helped me to define right away, and this is something that I learned later in life, I didn't know how to recognize. There was three things, and I heard this from a spiritual father. He spoke about control, value, and breaking your spirit. So let me tell you what I mean by that. So someone who's willing to control you, that's one thing. You'll see people, and not just men, but I'm talking about fellowship relationships, business relationships, work relationships. It could be your children, it could be your grandchildren. But with control, there's a certain place of manipulation that starts to take place. And we want to nip those things in the mud right away because confidence is where we want to choose to be. And then being vulnerable. Remember, I said vulnerable. Do we know how to be vulnerable in a healthy way? Because whenever we open up those doors to any relationship and fellowship and courtships, there are places that we have to be vulnerable. This is why people get so uncomfortable when they meet people or they're about to embark on a new project or go in front of people to speak. Whenever I do any type of engagement, I go through a mental process because I know I now have to become vulnerable. So let's think about that. So when we're thinking about we become vulnerable. So now if someone has bad intentions in our life, they're either manifesting these three characteristics, control, oppression, and breaking your spirit. So now control, you're just taking over and trying to control you, your every move, even your thoughts, what you think about yourself. And then there are those around you who will see your value. And they want to use your value. So we've got control, value, and breaking your spirit. So taking, putting you in a place wanting to, they bear these signs now. So then it, what about those? Because it's hard to decipher the difference. So when you think about someone who wants to control you, that's one thing. But now someone who sees your value, though, these are the people who might come into your life, and they not only recognize you and your gifts, but they're not promoting you and your gifts or your talents or encouraging you in such a way that you're able to support what you're doing. Instead, they're coming in a way that they want to use your gifts. They want to use what you're doing. I had an experience, when we were in Georgia. So you were working with this company. I won't say the name of the company, but they recognized your gifts. They knew what you were capable of doing, but they wanted to keep you in one position and not let you branch out. But they were using all your gifts to flourish, branch, brand, and promote their company. And mind you, they were doing a lot of shortcuts, but did not want you to break free or loose, but they saw the value in you. They didn't want to let you go. This is the same thing in so many dysfunctional relationships, and these are definitely the signs that someone has bad intentions for you, because if they can see your gifts and your talents and then try to make it their own or use it for their own, there's one thing about networking and supporting and promoting one another. But now if your gifts and your talents has to support someone else's vision and not the vision that God has given you, or bring you to a place where you're able to stand and flourish in your purpose, then something's wrong. I'm going to tell you the other signs too. And then breaking your spirit. If you're around someone and or people that somehow move you out of alignment with who you are, and you come away and you're feeling bad, every time you get together, something is uneasy or putting you down, or give you a compliment and then take the compliment away. It's like, you know, you look really, really nice today, but, you know, did you think about that project that you failed in? Like, always, you know, just thinking about, you know, just things that they, I can name a few things, and I know Monica's going to share too where she may be at with this, but there are areas where your spirit can be broken, and there's little subliminal and subtle things that can poke, chop, and tear down at who you are. If you, and I've always said this, if you take a drop of water and drop it on cement long enough, something's going to change in that cement. The foundation and the surface of that cement will eventually begin to take on another form that, or it will start, it will wear down, it will tear down. And so it doesn't matter how hard a surface is. If you take a drop of water and continuously drop it on a diamond, and we know that diamonds are extremely hard, something is going to tear. Something's going to change. Something is absolutely going to change. So I just want to remind everyone about that, because the blueprint for life and living, yeah, we got to be vulnerable, but we shouldn't have to deal with the consequences of someone who wants to manipulate you or control you and or break your spirit, constantly pulling at you in a negative way. We really want to stay away from those people. We have to find a place in our heart to understand what we're doing and what we're not doing with people. And that's just not in opposite sex relationships. That goes across the board. And it's just very true. Yeah, it's just very natural. You want to jump in, Monica?
Yep. just say, because I was sitting there, I hear what you're saying, because we're going to always hit right back to bondage. But we also want to make sure, like, while we're making sure that we're not dealing with these kind of people, we want to make sure that we're not the ones emitting that kind of energy either as a person. Because I can remember in certain relationships that either failed, but I've gone back to reflectively look at it, and I've gone, wait a minute. I placed this expectation on this person because this is what I wanted for me and to do this situation. And because they didn't do it, I rolled out. And so it might be a little bit different, but still at the same time, that's damaging somebody and then putting somebody in a place of manipulation and bondage when you feel like, oh, well, only I should benefit from this situation. When you don't communicate properly or correctly in the situation, whether it's a relationship, a romantic one, or even a friendship. I've done it in every aspect. In a friendship relationship, I've done it, and I've done it in a relationship. You know, a romantic relationship where I was dating someone, and it was like, wait a minute. You know, you're belting all these things out for me to do, but you ain't even here, so I'm out. I don't hear what you're saying. And, you know, as women especially, you know, we the first thing we want is we want somebody that's going to handle and take care of and protect and, you know, give us the security that we need. But then are we really making sure that we're doing our part? You know, things that we need to tend to. As a friend, are we making sure that we're, you know, adhering to the friendship that we because it's still a marriage. Every relationship that you're in is like a marriage. It's a contract of some sort. I'm in a marriage, you know, with you. I'm in a marriage with my friends. Of course, same thing. So there's commitment and there's guidelines that should be some kind of checkpoint somewhere where we're coming into communication, where we're understanding that we're not putting, you know, poisonous toxicity or toxic standards into the relationship.
I like the way you said that, because at times, like for women in my age category or in my walk of life and experience and in my past life and experience, we had to be very aggressive, very controlling, and at some points very manipulating. So this is, I can speak from both sides of the hip, because I remember having to do this, and I have to watch myself and catch myself. The first rule is being honest with myself and being honest with others. That's the first rule. And then being accountable for what I share and how much I share with other people. What we don't want to do is become a part of that community that says, yeah, I know that we can be controlled. Excuse me, guys, I got a call.
We have 1.5 miles. Turn right onto Legacy Park Boulevard.
It sounds like you're on a highway, Monica, too. So, but yeah, so there's that place where we know that we could easily say to ourselves, okay, you know what, I want to be in fellowship with this person. I want to be in a sisterhood. I want to be in a brother sisterhood in my spiritual relationships, even with my mentors and leaders. But now I have to watch what I'm doing and what I'm saying so that I don't fall victim and or create other victims or do things that support people being a victim. So that's so important, because we do that a lot. Sometimes we co-sign someone else's stuff so much that we afford other people getting hurt. We can cause other people to fall into a trap because we want to co-sign what we want and what we need. So it's kind of like that crab mentality. It's like, you know, I'm going to pull you down, and we're just going to pull each other down. And those are signs there. Dishonesty is a sign. Insecurity. If you're around people that are insecure, it doesn't mean that we don't love on them. But are we able to speak to them in truth? Are we able to tell the truth? Yeah, for example, I'm going to talk about this. We can do in our fellowship business relationships. I'm going to go to business because I know a lot about that too. And I have a colleague. She goes from one place to the next, to the next, to the next. And she's constantly pursuing money and pursuing business relationships, but she doesn't realize that she is forming all these soul ties in doing it. Same thing in our prayer life. We go to every prayer meeting, every podcast, every talk show, every leader, everyone pray with me and for me. And that's a big no-no in itself. But in every aspect in the world, whether it's in a prayer life, whether it's in business life, whether it's just in socialism, or especially on social media, there is such a thin line. That line is so thin, and we shouldn't be walking it. I don't think that we should ever put ourselves in that vulnerable place to walk it, because we'll find ourselves subject, because we'll have all this pulling but no learning. We'll have so much pulling, and there's consequences to that. So for example, the young lady I was just speaking about in terms of the business, guess what? She hasn't landed on her own feet to support her own business. So what ends up happening with her and I, now she's got to come to me. I've got to redo her contracts for free because we're networking together. And not only do I have to do them for her, now I've got to present them for her. I've done that for the past 3 years and never once said no. Never once said no. So now, does that mean that that's a relationship that's good for me? No, because now people affiliate me with her. Whenever I have to do anything in Chicago or New York, the first thing they say is, we're so-and-so. So now they've associated me with her. And that it's not a good look. So I've had to redefine what I'm doing. Do you guys see what I mean, how that puts us in not just a vulnerable position, but it misrepresents what we're doing and who we are? We all have been given a blueprint by God, a blueprint for living. And we should not be in a position that we don't know. We've been all given that blueprint. And now we have to have people in our lives that understand that blueprint, respect the blueprint, and don't pull us out of way of that. So what I mean by that is if we know that we're on a path, then we should have people in our lives who encourage and support that, tell us the truth. And then we have to make sure that we've gotten ourselves together too, because we don't want to be like the silly woman, just laid away into all types of just everywhere, all over the place, just led all over the place. I was speaking right. with someone about, it was a chapter I was meditating on in 2 Timothy, verse 3. And it was speaking about being led away, easily influenced, easily tricked, easily manipulated, easily weak. There are so many of us, and I, again, remember, we're speaking to the community. There are so many men and women today that let people in, and these people come in and manipulate their whole house. Next thing you know, the children are going one way, grandchildren are going another way, husbands and wives is going another way, and everyone is on a different page, but there is no harmony. That's called a division. And it's stagnating because the success of any family, any business, any corporation, any team, you got to be moving in harmony. And no one is as strong as the weakest link. It's called unstableness. When we do it as women, see, this is the double thing. Now, this is the double standard. Because when men do it, they say, oh, he's broken. He needs some deliverance. But when we do it as women, we're called unstable. We're called needy. They've even told us that we're, that you're whorish. You're weak, silly, and we get no respect. And then we have to climb back to a place of proving ourselves before it changes. And I think I told you this when you was younger. I could fall and I can make a mistake with someone who has bad intentions in my life. And I fall and allow myself to become a victim of those bad intentions and not use some wisdom and discernment on it. I could be drugged so far. It's like a tornado. And I use that analogy a lot, that just or a wave just coming and just carrying you away so far off course. By the time you wake up, you're like, oh, wait a minute. You look all around you. There's so much destruction. Because there's a lot of destruction that happens with this. Then you got to find your way back to your path. Now, there's no doubt in my mind that you find yourself back on your way back to the path, but and on your journey. But why go through that? So we absolutely have to be careful. We absolutely have to be careful. Monica, I want to talk about the signs. You had a list of signs. I don't know if you still have them that we were talking about.
Yeah, I do. There is, let me look back at it because I was over here like, wait a minute.
I remember one. This was one that stood out at me that we talked about. They take pleasure, and I forget how it was. What is it?
Take pleasure in other people's misfortune.
Okay. What does that mean? Like,
this is something that I've dealt with in several different, what I thought were friendships, and I found out later on, envy is a very silent thing. It's a very subtle thing. It sneaks up on you. But I remember being in a friendship, or I thought was a friendship, and my misfortune allowed that person to feel good about where they were. So it was like I was the catalyst to their self-esteem or their feeling good because I was going through so much. And because they were not, and they were able to assist or help me in my situation, and they began to kind of manipulate and control. It was almost like there was this phrase where it says, when you have children, you got to pick poop with chickens. Right?
Okay. What? Okay.
Right. Okay. So it's like, you know, you down there with the chickens and you're doing what you're doing, but it doesn't mean that the chickens get to pick over you. But in that situation, that's what I was. That's the level. That's where I was at. I was on that level down there with the chickens picking poop.
I remember when you were trying to tell me about it because when you were trying to explain it to me, guys, and I want you guys to hear what Monica's saying because. And I needed to interject there just for a second, because in my where I was raised, how I was raised, and where I come from, there was no such thing. You didn't take place in your people, mind you, because I was a street kid, so I grew up where survival was dependent upon each other. And you had to support each other. You didn't deceive one another. You were hoping for the best because we were trying to come from out of not just poverty, but war zones, different war zones. So to take pleasure in someone else's demise, to take pleasure in someone else's pain, to take pleasure in someone else's hurt, that's absolutely horrible. So when Monica was trying to explain it to me, I didn't understand it. And when she went through it with certain acquaintances and girlfriends and things of that nature and other people, other men in business, I didn't quite get it until I learned it. Because I've dealt with people who were deceitful, but I didn't know that people really took pleasure in someone else doing bad. That blew my mind. It just really blew my mind. I've known people who were murderers. I know. Right, but to take pleasure in someone else's misfortune, you know, and if we could give an example because we've got a lot of listeners on, and so we got men and women on, Monica. I don't know if you could see the board or not, because I know you're out. But just so you men and women know, someone who takes pleasure in someone else's misfortune or other people's misfortune, let's say someone lost a job. You don't like that person, but they lost their job or they lost a contract, and you happy. I don't even know how to do that with my enemy. I don't. That's not a part of my DNA. People that I don't like, I want to still see them win. That's what I'm here for. I've got many people that I don't like. I really don't like them. But I don't want to see them lose. Certain people say, well, how can you work with that person? And how can you work with this person?
But I still want you to eat. That's exactly what that is. I don't hold no qualms. We ain't got to be friends. I still want to see you eat, though. You don't got to eat at my table. That's all.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, I've had people I dislike, had disagreed with on even on the jobs, and when I found out that they were fired or they was going through something, I'm the first person like, what? Put up a collection or something, anything. What's going on? You know, so the way I operate. But see, being like that can be dangerous. You have to be able to guard your peace, and you got to know when you're going to exert yourself. What
situation is worth doing? Absolutely. So I wanted to spit off the top eight that I know me and Monica have identified with that we have talked about over our years and our relationship as partners, not as a mother and daughter and no parenting, but as a partner and as my sister in this walk and this journey. So let me tell you this. So the first thing one of the ones that really, really jumped out is the eight signs. People who take pleasure in putting in others' misfortune, people that are capable or they make you feel bad or even nervous. How about feeling bad or nervous or any kind of way? It's people that make you feel anything other than inspired and motivated when you're around them. They're mean to animals. Look, people, I know a lot of people don't get it. I used to be one of those people. We talked about that a lot, right, Monica? It was really funny because I wasn't one of those people who used to take my animal to the hospital, nothing like that, but now I am. This is the type of people we are. We even with our animals, we have hamsters that we would take to the doctor for a checkup or what have you. But people who are mean and are capable of being mean to animals, be careful about them. Number three, that was number three. Number four, people who use humor to insult you. Humor is one thing, but there's people move out of order. I heard someone talking about their private parts or private part of their body. And they were speaking about this to another fellow colleague, and they were insulting that man, and there was nothing funny about that. We should never be in a position of we're insulting anybody or even receiving any insults. It's not funny. It's nothing funny about it. But be very careful about those who are in your life, and they use humor to insult you. You understand? I'm a big woman. So if someone makes a joke, big women, something, I don't know, I can't even think about a joke, but anything that would insult you, something that insults you, your children, your work, your speech. I've heard people talk about how other people talk and how they speak, your education, your lack of education, the color of your skin, whether you're white or black. There's nothing funny about that. I would never say to any one of my brothers or sisters, because they're white, hey, you cracker. I would never say that. Oh, that's sweet. I'm just joking. Hey, hunky, how you doing, hunky? No, I wouldn't do that. You understand? We have to be very, very careful about that. They lie all the time. How about that? Just lie. They may not even be lying to you. but just lying. So that's number five, is lying. They lie. So you take down these five, write them down. So these are people, let's start again. So people take pleasure in other people's misfortune. They make you feel bad. Mm-hmm. They make you feel bad. They're mean to animals. They use humor to insult you. They lie all the time. They lie all the time.
Yep.
They're manipulative. They just manipulating. All over the place. Always manipulating something. Nothing happens naturally. Everything is manipulated. Everything is orchestrated and controlled for whatever reason. And this is a big one. If you're concerned about something or you have a fear about something, me and my daughter was talking, and I had a genuine concern about the function of one of our companies and where it was going and what we were looking at and how it was not going and or producing. And my daughter says to me, well, Monica says to me, Queen, she says to me, well, you're worried about nothing. And I had to stop her to make sure that she understood why I had those concerns. It's not genuinely a fear, but it could become a fear. You want to make sure that the people in your life, that they understand your concerns, which you're fearful of. Because the people in your life are supposed to bring you to a place of not just confidence and courage, but a complete place of safety. You should feel safe no matter what you are doing and what you are about to embark on, because fear is the biggest killer of any hope or dream. People do not act right now to this very day because they were afraid. They have some fear about disappointment, completion, being able to complete something. So if you've got people in your life that belittle your fears or tell you that your fears aren't real or they're not valid, it's just like saying that your feelings aren't valid, and neither are you. Neither are you. So I've had to be very careful about that because I'm real big on encouraging people and killing fear. But, you know, just because I'm not afraid of a spider doesn't mean someone else isn't. Just because I don't know I'm not afraid of snakes, because everybody knows I'm not afraid of snakes. But just because I'm not afraid of snakes doesn't mean that no one, somebody else isn't petrified of them. I had to be mindful of that. Now, mind you, I don't have them as pets. But I'm not scared of them, you know, I'm just not. So the last one, this is really, really important. People who don't feel any guilt or any remorse, that's a real one right there. People who don't feel any guilt or any remorse, that is so real.
Because wait, that to me, that's a little, it's a little broad. It can almost be a little controversial, because there are things that I don't feel remorse about or feel any guilt about, especially when it's guarding me and my own peace. But if you're saying, when I think about people who don't have anything to lose, and a reckless behavior, I get it. And I get it with the not having no remorse about their actions in that way. So I think we have to kind of put a defining factor.
Well, you,
like,
yeah, because you have to define that too, because if you don't have any guilt or any remorse, man, you need to be talking some more. So what you mean you don't have guilt or remorse?
I don't have any. Like, okay, when I go to bed at night, I'm going to bed with a clear conscience because I did what I was supposed to do. I don't have no guilt if I had to deliver a message to somebody, whether it hurt them or not. I try not to, especially when I'm allowing God to talk to me, to do something or to relay a message. I give that message. Whether that person likes it or not, whether they receive it or not, it is not my problem. I don't have no remorse about that. I don't have no guilt because I needed to say what I needed to say. I don't have no guilt when it comes to protecting me and mine. I don't have no guilt for that. So when I say, oh, let me take and push somebody, or like, I don't have any guilt for doing things. I'm a little radical, a little intense when it comes to certain things, especially my where my gifts lie. It's not for everybody. I don't have any guilt for not attending.
Well, that's a difference. See, there's a big difference. So, but let's just make sure we're all clear, not just for our audience, but for me too. Because me and you, we live together, work together, do all kinds of everything together. So if you, let's just say hypothetically that I had $10,000 in the bank and you felt like you wanted to take my $10,000 and give it to your fiance, who you should not be giving the money to anyway. That's just my opinion. Anyway. But you done took my $10,000 and you done gave it to this man, and you knew because he needed to do something to save his life. Let's go that far. He needed to save his life. Some rats was coming after him, was going to kick his behind, and he needs the $10,000. You done stole my $10,000 and gave it to him. Are you saying that you wouldn't feel no guilt or no remorse?
Well, first, This is why we needed to define this, because I wouldn't steal anything. I don't have a need to steal. I would have already presented that to you. And aspect, the thing that Mike would have known, this is what we're trying to do. You would have known immediately, because that's how we're connected. So even with your son, you know, your son-in-law, your gained son, you would have been like, wait a minute, what's going on with him? This is how in tune we already are. So that's not a given.
So because I want to define, because when you're talking about self-love, that's one thing. But let me not put words in the mouth. So when we talk about guilt and remorse, and you say for you and yours and protect you and yours, let's say we were out on the outs. Let's say it wasn't me. Let's say it was somebody else.
Yes, we're talking about you, my children, fiance. We're talking about
my
family.
Okay, let's take me out of the equation. Let me take me out the equation in right now. Let's take me out the equation. Let's say that this person was neither friend nor foe or even an enemy. And you had an opportunity to take something from those people to save you and your people. Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
All right. So what you're
talking
about?
There are things that are provision. This is where I'm at. If that was the case, if to say within that scenario, God usually gives you provisions. No, I'm not sorry for God blessing me with a provision and me following and being obedient with gaining it. I'm not going to be sorry about it. God gave me a directive and he said, go do A, B, and C. And see, this is how the trickster works. Because he knows my heart. I'm not going to want to step anybody's toes to do anything. Okay? I'm not going to want to manipulate or harm anybody else. And if it means that I'm going to be putting somebody else in harm's way to get what I need to get, or it's going to cause somebody else to, you know, to fall at their own demise to do what I need to do on my end, I have to, that situation, because that's one of those tricky situations. It's a trickster situation. But if I'm getting a directive from God that says, this is what you need to be doing, then why would I not trust God to do what he has to do for the next people? He says, don't worry about all those things. Worry about what's in front of you. Worry about what is yours. God gave you a directive for. That's where that goes. So when I say I don't have
that's
any more.
That's part of that blueprint. You guys, remember we were talking about that blueprint, what Monica's talking about right now, that's part of that blueprint, and I'm glad you defined that, because, you know, even though you're my daughter, we're business partners and everything, but if you bear any one of those 8 signs, I'm looking at you kind of funny, too. So don't bear none
that's
of them 8 signs, girl. Look at here. Yeah, you be gone, too. I got to cut you off. Look.
Exactly.
Look at here.
You see what I'm saying? But you see, you just said it. You just said exactly what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so now if you bear one of those signs, I'm okay with not having any guilt or remorse if I cut you off.
Right? I'm going to be okay with cutting people off if you bear those signs. I'm going to be okay with saying, all right, bye. I don't care if it's you, your babies, and whatever. If you in my situation and you're more of a liability than a benefactor in my situation, you causing me more harm. The little bit you causing my hair to fall out. I keep trying to rock with you, and you not listening to what I'm saying. And you say, all right, bye.
Right.
And it ain't
See, this, I wanna open up this conversation. I want to bring Mr. Awara and Apostle Coleman and Devon on this topic when we come back in the fall. Because now, and everybody, a lot of, and for those in Chicago, they don't know Apostle Coleman, but we were speaking about in her walk and a lot of work that she does and where she's come from and in her experience, where she's had to cut some people off. And then it's been hard for her to define because she loves her children and her grandchildren, but she has made so many sacrifices that she shared with me that not even her children know anything about. To keep them covered. So at what point do you cut them off? I would really love to open up that topic because she's the type of person, she don't fool with a whole lot of nonsense, but her mission causes her to have to deal with so many types of people, including the family. And Mr. Awara, I really do appreciate you coming in. And just to share this, I don't know if you guys want to jump on, but Mr. Awara just lost $2.5 million on the contract. I witnessed the contract. I reviewed it with him because of a family member that he knew he was supposed to cut off. And then now having to make that trip back to London to explain what it is that you're going to have to do. I can't tell all your business, but, you know, I do want you guys to come in. I really do appreciate you coming in and listening to us today. But that is just so important about what we're doing to define when we're ready to let go of people who don't have any guilt or remorse. See, those people who are capable of hurting us and doing things dishonestly, I'm so glad you explained that way, Queen, because people don't realize that just holding on to it, it's like we're not just co-signing it, but we're enabling people who really don't have any guilt or remorse. Those people become very dangerous too. They're a little narcissistic also. They're extremely narcissistic. You understand? I had a family member who stole from me and stole from Monica, would come back, say they sorry, they're going to do this. And because they were family, we tried. We've had people that work for us that we knew were not really on the up and up, but we tolerated it because we needed the service or we needed those responsibilities and duties to be carried out. But it was a complete compromise, and it not only left us vulnerable, but everybody that was involved with us was vulnerable too. So we have to look at those people and make sure to cut them off. How do we discern? Feel guilt or remorse? How do we discern it? That's the big question. That's the real, real, real big question. Remember words too. I know we're talking about the signs that a person may have bad intentions in your life. Words, guys. You see that there's the play of words because it'll make you think. So when we talked about not feeling any guilt or remorse, that is so important because we have to know where we're coming from, and when people choose certain words, words are so powerful. Words are so powerful. I'm learning. Look, I'm 54, I'm a half a century and some change, and I learned from my daughter about words that I use. Queen talks to me all the time about certain words. I'll use certain words. And I'll speak something over myself and over someone else that I should not have. You know, and so we have to be very, very careful. The people that come in our lives that have bad intentions, these people come, they talking so smooth. You know what I'm saying? They just so charming. They look like nice little old ladies with cute little faces. Some of them look like and sound like me. You understand? So we have to be able to discern what we're doing in those words and what people really, really mean by them. Anything that exercises any control, remember going back to those three principles, control, your value, and breaking your spirit, uh-uh. Run, 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 run. I can guarantee you there are five people in your lives, everyone who's on right now, we've got 54 people in the studio right now. I'm sorry, 52 people. That's me and Monica. So 52 people in the studio right now. And then we've got people, and we don't have teams on with us today. But out of 54 folk, I can guarantee you, and that's including me and Queen, that you have five people in your life right now that are absolutely God-sent. And I can guarantee you that there are about two or three that have bad intentions. And I would like to absolutely ask you to weigh out, look at those five people in your life and embrace those five people. That those people come in the form of not wanting to control you, not wanting to use you, not wanting to break your spirit. They absolutely want the best for you. They will encourage you. They may not be of the same faith. If you're religious people, they may not be of the same religion or anything. God is in control of the rest. But these people that God sent that's assigned to you, they're non-controlling. They won't break your spirit. They won't try to use you. They see your value, but they're not trying to use your value. Yeah, and that's another subject. We'll talk about that one day, Senegalism. And I'll talk to you guys about that later on down the road. That's not something I want to open up for everybody right now. But you don't want people who are controlling. You don't want people who see your value and use it for their own self. And you don't want anyone that's around you breaking your spirit. You don't. This is a season, and this is something that I learned, not just through my partner, Queen, but she's got two other business partners in her manager right now, that I've learned that these are areas that I don't know anything about, but I want to support her in it. So there's a place where a lot of people who are in the generation after me and other people on this line, and even those who are my generation, this is a season where you're going to walk into things that are very, very different, very, very new. And let me tell you, right here, right now, everybody, listen, and those who may come across this recording later, this year, 2022, 2023, you're going to learn things that's going to shake what you think is your foundation. So don't build your foundation on nobody else. Don't build your right. foundation on somebody's reputation. Don't do it. Don't build your foundation on somebody else's ministry. You better build your foundation on God and God alone. That's it.
Nobody
because
else,
things
nobody
are going to...
Right.
Yes, listen, because where we're going at in this country, what's going to be revealed about the folk that we thought we knew, the people that we done put up on pedestals, the ones that we said they could never do this, they could never do that. And I'm not just talking politically. I'm talking about different leaders and religious leaders. You better understand. So if your foundation is built on, so I don't care if you in the mom and pop church down in Mississippi, North Carolina. I don't care if you in, blink your eye, can't see the town church. It doesn't matter. If your foundation is built on that and your livelihood is built on that, you're in trouble. Your foundation should be built on your relationship with God and what you could bring to the church. Because if the church get blown away in a tornado or a hurricane, you got a problem now. What are you standing on? I've seen people sit in the church manipulated just by people just like that who have bad intentions, and these people walk away, still got bad credit, no financial peace. When the economy turns down, the whole church turned down. That's not where you're supposed to be.
I remember during the pandemic, a lot of people, you know, they quarantined everybody. Everybody had to stay home. Churches were even shut down. People were going out of their mind because they couldn't get up, get dressed, and get to the building, the church building. They were going through it because they were so used to the routine of getting up, getting dressed, going to church. You know, every day, that routine. It was like, ooh, where's our society going at? Because in that moment, you realize that no one in the church was really being, like certain churches, certain areas, certain people that belong to certain churches were not able to fix and to move. But then I saw other church leaders where they were like, wait a minute, let's go here. Let's show us where we're going at. It's all right. We're in the middle of a crisis. But this is opportunity. We're going to get this. We got this. And wasn't nobody hurting. Everybody was still winning, even in the pandemic. And so, yeah, you have to be careful because there are toxic leaders out here. There are people out here speaking things up on you. This is a part of that manipulation. These are the part of the people, like I said. And that's the thing. They can be God sent all day long. But if they're going to be, and I think I spoke this out to someone before about other people in their space influencing them, you know, being able to be influenced by the trickster. You got to pray over your team. You got to pray over your people. You got to pray over all those that are around you because you don't know who's going to be influenced when, where, and sometimes they don't even know that they're. This is why you have to pay attention to the toxicity and being able to be without. And for me, you got to be able to be without remorse and without, you know, feeling like, oh, you know what? Let me not. You got to be able to know when to cut it off and when to turn off. When to say, okay, this is not the situation. Yeah, you might minister to somebody, but if they don't bite, they don't bite. That don't mean shut down and cut them off. In essence, but it means stop trying to beg them. You can't beg. You know, you can't just go, I'm trying to give you a word. I'm trying to bless you. Can you receive it? You can't make somebody receive it. They don't want to receive it. But when they finally decide and they finally come to themselves, because that's what happens, they come to themselves, they begin to talk to them, and they end up knowing, they go within themselves, and they go, wait, that person had a word for me. Go back and see if they still. And then, you know, then whatever happens, happens. You know, if God says, shut the door, God says, all right, that's it, that's it. If God says, give them a certain window, okay, that's that certain window. God says, like, he's the God of second chances. We are merely man here doing the work. So,
Yes. And I want to say this, too. I want to say this because this is so important about words and where words come from. And when you said earlier, making sure that we're not part of that I want to call it that community, that part of that culture that becomes the people with the bad intentions. So we have to be careful about what we say and what we speak over each other. We're supposed to come to each other in truth. Right. We could come to each other in truth. And I want to say, let's help the rest of our community, stop calling people witches. Stop doing that. Mm-hmm. Stop calling people warlocks. Let's stop doing that. You understand? We know that witches and warlocks, we know what they are. But when we're talking about in the kingdom and we're looking at a brother or a sister and we've discerned some certain things, we should be praying about it first. But if we speak that over somebody, they're not going to do it. And if you haven't written down any declarations for your children or yourself, you have done a disservice. Please write down what you want manifested in your life. Pick a time of the day and speak them out loud. Write down what you know should be manifested in your children's life and your grandchildren's life. Pick a certain time of the day and speak them out loud. You want to do them all together? Make sure you put your children's names. You know your sons are kings. You know that they're going to be set free. Do that. I have a great godson that's in California right now. I'm not going to speak on it or what he's arrested for, but I've been speaking these things over him for his freedom. so that something would happen in the courts so that they let him up out of that place up there. He's actually in Nevada. So I want him free. Now, the crime that he's committed and what they claim that he's committed has nothing to do with him. Supernaturally, I know this, but I can't speak about it, but I know I could decree and declare about it because he's a kingdom walker. He's a kingdom walker. He's a kingdom builder. So we know that our lives are already hard. So the last thing that we need to be doing to each other is speaking the wrong things over each other. I'm saying that especially to our young men. And don't take it personally because I see a lot of you on here today with us from Chicago. I want you guys to think about how you're walking, how you're moving, and what you're saying to each other. How you're walking, how you're thinking, how you're moving, and what you're saying to each other. Think about that. And write down, because this isn't what you want in your life. Write it down. This isn't just for women. This is for you men, too. Mm-hmm. Write it down. Right. You guys already know, because y'all been fooling with me for three, four years now. So this is a thing. And if your grandmother don't got nothing written down, say, hey, grandma, let's write down some declarations and decree. Let's decree and declare together. Let's decree. Yeah. And declare together. A lot of our folk in the churches don't even teach what decree means. It's an official order issued by a legal authority. That is us. We are a legal authority. So this is why God decrees and declares over our lives, and he demands that we do the same thing. This is when we declare something, we don't have to wait for the courts to declare things over our children and anybody else. We can do it as well. We say something in a place of an empathetic manner and being emphatic about it and being solemn about it so that we are declaring what we know. We acknowledge possession of something. That's what declaring means. I could break it down and say a whole lot more, but that I just wanted to share that because it's so important. Because it wasn't taught to us the reason why, because people would say, well, but why? A lot of times we don't do things because we don't understand why. What is it for? You understand what I'm saying? So this is why we have to do that. It's a movement. It's a movement that claims, not just for just someone, but in our households, that something will happen. We're in agreement. Words are powerful. Words are powerful, family. They're powerful. They're powerful.
You understand that, too. Your thoughts are words.
Yes.
When they come out of your mouth, it's already formed in your head.
And it's an adjustment.
That matters.
Yes, it's a major adjustment because, like dealing with Queen, when I'm talking with her, I have to remind myself, wait a minute, I have to speak to her as a sister and a woman of God. Yes, she's my daughter, but I can't mother her as an adult woman. I could parent her. There are a few occasions where I'm allowed to still be her mother, but those days and times has passed because she's a grown woman. When she was a little girl, and I will always be her mother, but I can't lord over her like a little girl because she'll get the message to really believe that she's a little girl. She won't come into her fullness. So I'm constantly reminding myself what I say and how I address certain things and conversations with Africa, address them as a partner and as a sister in Christ. Mothering comes around for the holidays and when we're eating dinner, if that's what we choose to do. But we have to be careful about how we allow people to speak to us and what they're saying. Yeah. She won't let me speak to her any kind of way. And I'm just sharing that because we could do that with respect, confidently, and all boldness. We have to choose our words carefully. Absolutely have to choose them carefully. I had a request that I wanted to play this. And it's a little bit comical, and I know it's, but it's so much truth in it. It's a brother who did a poem about niggas and flies. And it kind of goes along with this, what we're talking about.
It was deep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's very, very deep. So I am going to play it right now. And those who are sensitive and got soft ears and soft skin, pardon me, but, you know, this is for the grown folk.
This is for grown folk
and for the, yes, for the woke folk. But I'm just going to play it just so that we could just stay in tune with where we are and recognizing some of these signs. But I'm going to go ahead and play it right now. Okay.
I used to think I gotta be a nigga, 'cause I'm black and I'm poor. But I don't believe that, not anymore. But I remember being a child when my mama and her niggas would do her wrong. My mama would sing that same old song. Sometimes she would sing it with tears in her eyes. Sometimes she would sing it after a sigh. Whew, niggas and flies. Niggas and flies, niggas and flies. I never asked her what she meant, but I always wondered why my mama would compare a nigga to a nasty little fly. For years and years I wondered, what the hell was she talking about? Took me to go to prison to finally find out. See, what time to sit and think on what led me to the cell. It was all them things that made me a nigga that put me in living hell. See, flies are hypnotized by shit. They love it. But the difference between niggas and flies is flies only like shit that stink. Niggas like all kinds of shit. Now, I'm going to tell you a kind. Just give me a second thing. Niggas like expensive shit. Niggas like fast shit. Niggas like cool shit. Then you got niggas in different places that use different words for the shit that put smiles on their faces. New York niggas call it fat shit. Philly niggas call it hot shit. D.C. niggas call it tight shit. Down there, the southern Ebonical grammar's what they use to spit, so the things they don't like, they call Bama shit. Now, where I come from, if a nigga don't like something, it's called bullshit or fuck shit or nut shit. And if a nigga do something to you and you ain't willing to stab him, kick him, stomp him, or kill him, it's called pussy shit, chump shit, or bitch shit. See, the thing at the number one spot is this. It's all ignorant shit. 'Cause nigga shit is ignorant shit. Another thing I learned from jail is that it ain't only the brothers. Niggas come in all shapes, sizes, and colors. You got white niggas and black niggas, short niggas and tall niggas. Ignorance makes them all niggas. Now, to remain a nigga takes a whole lot of bravery, because being one makes you a prime candidate for modern-day slavery. See, the government's laws ain't hard to figure. They're designed to make it illegal to be a nigga. That's the game's rules. The tools they use are lack of books and nigga schools. Welfare and free health care to create dependent fools. America, the United States, are nigga warehouses. 'Cause they breed niggas. Prison, the United Gates, are nigga warehouses, and they need niggas to fill them up. But what bother me is, a nigga act like if you a nigga that you should be proud. Like you should stand on the roof and yell it out loud. But why should one be proud of being a nigga? 'Cause you sell drugs to your brothers and sisters and pull triggers? Or maybe it's because niggas use sperm to make bastards in life. Fatherless children become niggas from lack of fatherly advice. Therefore, niggas make niggas. Or maybe a nigga should be proud because a nigga lies and a nigga steals and gives useless excuses like I needed that money to pay my bills. See, I got a $500 a month car bill. I got a $200 a month weed bill. I got a $300 a month cellular phone bill. After I finish paying those, I don't have money for my children's clothes, for my light bill, my water bill, my cable bill, my gas bill. For niggas, these problems are heavyweight, 'cause niggas ain't got their priorities straight. Ain't got food for the house, but got a fresh pack of $10 cigarettes, and a nigga wouldn't be complete without a niggette. See, niggettes watch TV instead of watching her kids. Her answers to marriage problems is, get your ass in the bed. Tell her to get a job and she'll get very upset, enjoying the luxuries of the welfare check. More and more kids mean more and more money, but her children still go to school looking bummy. The food stamps buy choke sandwiches. The rest is traded for cash so she can buy some tight jeans to show off her ass. Where you go, huh? One of them niggas killed your son to get your hair done. One of the others sold crack to your mother. Why'd he do that? To put that $800 coat on your back. Bring that to a nigga's attention and she'll feel bad, but use a song for a front and say, you got to use what you got to get what you want. Well, what you want. Well, what I don't want is to be a nigga anymore. But from a nigga to a black man is like fighting a war. Happy to be niggas that call you names and beat you down for trying to change. Instead of niggas and flies, maybe mama should have said niggas and crabs. See, because every time I try to get out the barrel, a nigga reaches out and grabs me and tries to pull me back. But you could take that leg, nigga, because I ain't having that. See, I learned that being a man comes with paying a price. So that leg you use to pull me back is the leg I sacrifice. I want to be a black man, not a nigga man, understand? Because nigga men cause misery while black men make history. Nigga men always make excuses for why they put their necks in nooses. Black men stand up like kings. A nigga will fall for anything. That's why I'm taking a stand. I ain't a nigga no more. I'm a proud black man. I'm a strong black man. I'm a wise black man. Understand? Fly niggas.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so listen, I know, and this is for my folk, the language I'll prepare in the future for any language that may be offensive to anybody. I always find to break the curses or for anything that's ever offensive, whether I'm hearing it and or whether someone else is on the receiving part of it. It's important. It's really, really important that we understand the language of how every community speaks. You want to move like a queen, you're going to have to understand like a queen. And what I absolutely love is the explanation of ignorance and what can happen and how these things happen in our communities all across the board that allow people to be so enslaved in their position that they don't know when they're victimizing or enslaving another. And that was the whole purpose of our topic on today and being able to deliver information, not just with regards to people who have bad intentions or may have bad intentions in your life, but those of us who have been victimized by these people, those who have been disappointed, heartbroken, misused, misunderstood, manipulated, traumatized, abused, right. You got to know where it's coming from. And unless we stand up and recognize who we are and stand up like kings and queens, guess what? We will lay down to anything. We will always find ourselves in a position that we're not just being manipulated, but totally misunderstood. Bad intentions, that they care about how much you love or how you love or why you love? No, not at all. Not at all. They don't care about these things. So we owe it to ourselves and to each other to educate one another, encourage one another to be strong, encourage one another to move relentlessly by way of obedience to God first, by way of obedience in a certain reserve for how we walk, how we talk, and how we love others in our lives today. The reality is this, is that
we don't want our spirit and spirit man to be uneasy in any decision that we make. Not any decision that we make. And so it is important. It's really important that we're able to share and have open topics and conversations just like this. I want to thank everyone for joining us on this evening. We are going to go ahead and play it out and with something just, of course, just a little bit inspiring, not just in who we are, but who God is in our lives and being grateful. Also, I do want to express that we're queens. We're all queens and kings. And life is tough enough outside of God's will. In God's will, there's no promises made. However, we get the strength to go through the tough times. With that being said, I'm going to play a piece by a sister during a stomp session that is absolutely encouraging for us all about waiting and being in confidence. Okay. All right. Thank you for joining us on today.
So it seemed that it was cool for everyone to be in a relationship but me. So I took matters into my own hands and ended up with him. Display the characteristics of a cheater, a liar, an abuser, and a thief. So why was I surprised when he broke into my heart? I called 911, but I was cardiac arrested for aiding and abetting because it was me who let him in, claiming we were just friends. It was already decided for me by the first date that even if he wasn't, I was going to make him the one. You know, I was tired of being alone, and I simply made up in my mind that it was about that time, so I decided to drag him along for the ride, because I was always the bridesmaid and never the bride. Virgin in the physical, but mentally just a grown woman on the corner, and he was tired of the wait. So I was going to make him the one. He had a form of godliness, but not much. But hey, I can change him, so I'll take him. I mean, he's close enough. Ready to sell my aorta for a quarter, not knowing the value of its use to me. Arteries so clogged with my will, it blocked his will from flowing through me. So I thank Christ that his blood pressure gave this heart an attack that flatlined my obscured vision, put me flat on my back. Through my ignorance, he saw. So through my sternum, he sawed and cracked open my chest to transplant Psalms 51:10. A new heart and a renewed right spirit within. So now I fully understand, better yet, I thoroughly comprehend how much I need to wait for you. See, the bad thing is that I knew he wasn't you from the beginning. Because in the beginning was the Word, and he didn't even sound or shine like your son. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, and all he could whisper was sweet, empty nothings. Which meant nothing. He couldn't even pray what I needed him to. Asking him to fast would be absurd, so forget about being cleansed and washed with water through the Word. But I know you. You are already praying for me. Even never having met me, let me assure you, I will wait for you. I will no longer date, socialize, or communicate with carbon copies of you to appease my boredom or to quench my thirsty desire for attention and short-lived compliments from sorta kinda. You know he's sorta kinda right, but sorta kinda wrong. His first name Luke, his last name Wong. I won't settle for false companionship. I won't lay in the embrace of his arms, attempting to find some closeness, but never feeling so far apart, because I just want to be held. Because all I gotta do is say no. No more almost sessions of almost coming close, passing winks and buying drinks, and I'm a flirt who flirts with the ideology of, can you just tell me how much I can get away with and still be saved? No more. I'll stay in my bed alone and write poems about how I will wait for you. He won't even come close. Our fingers won't even interlock. We won't even exchange breath, because I have thoughts that I've saved as, and a father God has only equipped you to open. I will no longer get weighted down from so-called friends and family talks about the concern for my biological clock when I serve the author of time. Who is not subject to time, but I'm subject to him. He has the ability to stop, fast forward, pause, or rewind at any given time. So if we could role play, you would be Abraham and I would be Sarah. Or you could be Isaac and I could be Rebecca, a servant's answered prayer. I am bone of your bone, flesh of your flesh, made up of your rib, Adam. And once we meet, like electrons, I will be bound to your nucleus, completely indivisible, atom. We even speak the same math. 1 + 1 + 1 = 3, which really equals 1 if you add them. We were all created in his image, but you have the ability to reflect, project, and even detect the sun. If I were to explain what you look like, you would have to look like a star, a son of the sun. I would gain energy simply from the light that you shine on me. I would need you in order to complete my photosynthesis. I await your revelation, but once again from the Genesis, I will wait for you. And I will know you, because when you speak, I will be reminded of Solomon's wisdom. Your ability to lead will remind me of Moses. Your faith will remind me of Abraham. Your confidence in God's word will remind me of Daniel. Your inspiration will remind me of Paul. Your heart for God will remind me of David. Your attention to detail will remind me of Noah. Your integrity will remind me of Joseph. And your ability to abandon your own will remind me of the disciples. But your ability to love selflessly and unconditionally will remind me of Christ. But I won't need to identify you by any special Matthews or any special marks, because this word will be tatted all over your heart. And you will know me, and you will find me where the boldness of Esther meets the warm closeness of Ruth, where the hospitality of Lydia is aligned with the submission of Mary, which is engulfed in the tears of a praying Hannah. I will be the one drenched in Proverbs 31, waiting for you. But to my Father who has known me before I was birthed into this earth, only if you should see fit, I desire your will above mine, so even if you call me to a life of singleness, my heart is content with you, the one who has sinned. You are the greatest love story ever told, the greatest love ever known. You are forever my judge, and I'm forever your witness. And I pray that I'm always found on a mission about my Father's business. I will always be yours, and I will always wait for you, Lord, more than the watchmen wait for the morning. More than the watchmen wait for the morning, I will wait.
I tried to told y'all, give it up for genetics. Oh.